This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Did a scorned hairstylist hire a hitman on Tinder, of all places, to brutally assassinate her ex-boyfriend and, wait for it, his teen daughter? This, according to cops. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
A New Jersey woman is accused of attempting to hire a hitman off popular dating app Tinder.
Could this be? Did the scorned hairstylist want revenge so badly she wanted to assassinate her ex-boyfriend and his teen daughter? How did the teen daughter get roped into this? You know, I've got an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now. But joining me, in addition to an all-star panel, is a very special guest. This is a man, a former husband, a father, who endured a hit shot 9 times when his ex-wife wanted to gain control of money that was meant to raise their son. Joining me, Baron Lee, shot 9 times, all ordered by your wife. Now, I've always been amazed, Baron, if I may call you that. I feel like I know you. We've discussed your case. I've talked to you and thought about you so many times since the incident. What went through your mind as you were lying there? I'm sure you couldn't process all of the facts that here you were just out in a parking lot minding your own business. And why you, of all people, why were you assailed by unknown guys and shot 9 times? What went through your mind?
I realized I could have died at any moment. And then I was wondering, you know, who actually at the time I knew who was ordering a hit on me. I just didn't know who the shooter was at the time.
I mean, you were shot point blank. I will never forget it. All in a bid by your ex-wife to gain control of that money set aside to help raise your son. How has your son reacted to what happened to you, Baron?
Well, my son is non-mobile, non-verbal. So fortunately, he doesn't have the trauma to deal with like other kids would have had to. So he has no idea what happened.
You know what? Thank goodness that this did not weigh on his mind on top of everything else. And that was a considerable amount of money to help raise him, to secure his future, which he is going to need. Why did she do it, Baron?
I ask myself that every single day. I just say pure stupidity is what comes down to it.
Guys, a guy that lived through a similar hit. But to the case in chief, Baron, don't move. I want your take on this. First of all, take a listen.
They were together for approximately a year, and there was clearly problems in the relationship.
During the detention hearing, Camden County Assistant Prosecutor David Dietz outlined a screenshot of a text message where DiOrio negotiates the price for the hit. Another text message has the defendant discussing a prior attempt to hire someone to kill her ex. Recorded conversation between DiOrio and the informant was also submitted.
That from our friends at CBS News 3. Joining me, as I said, an all-star panel straight out to Rodrigo Terrajón, Crime and Courts reporter at the Philly Inquirer. Rodrigo, thank you for being with us. How did this whole thing start? It's my understanding that the would-be killer is a scorned hairstylist. And we heard Ellie at the get-go say there were problems in the relationship. But Rodrigo, there are problems in every relationship. My husband, as I like to say, my current husband, and I never had an argument until we had the twins. And then we immediately started arguing about how they would be raised. Practically every decision, what time to go to bed, how many bottles, what should go in the bottle, you name it. Okay? And that goes on today. That's our sole source of argument. What is best for our children? So, yes, every relationship has ups and downs, but really?
Prosecutors say that the relationship, like the Camden County prosecutor mentioned earlier, between Jacqueline DiOrio and Officer O'Hanlon started around a year ago and quickly turned pretty volatile. There was a few months that seemed like the relationship was going And around August, there was an allegation of a restraining order that was filed by the officer against DiOrio. So things turned sour relatively quickly. The next month, the officer reported that his house was damaged by a Molotov cocktail that was thrown at it. There has not been any sort of clear link between the ex.
Hold on just a second, Terahon. You're putting the cart before the horse. I've got to get into it, okay? I know about the Molotov. I know about the beginning of the relationship, but what I don't know about is the intricacies of that relationship. What went wrong? Why did they break up? Why couldn't she just move on? As my grandmother said, men, no offense to you, of course, Rodrigo, that men are like buses, a new one will come along every 15 minutes. So why does she fixate so much on the boyfriend to the extent she wanted him dead and wanted his teen daughter dead, too? How did that come about, Rodrigo?
Yeah, so that's unclear still. Like I said, there was a few months where everything seemed to be going smoothly. And from one month to another, there was some sort of volatility between them, some sort of tension, to say the least. And there was a restraining order filed by the officer against DiOrio, and the attorney for DiOrio later said that there was also a restraining order that she filed against him that was later withdrawn.
Straight out to Greg Morse, following up on what Rodrigo Terahon just said. Greg Morse, high-profile lawyer, joining us of Morse Legal, currently counsel to the CIA. Well, you've got your hands full. Greg, dueling TROs. Don't you just love that? And of course, I'm being sarcastic. When a real victim comes into court for a temporary restraining order, and what does the other one do? Race back in to go, it's not, I'm not at fault. It's them. All of this going on. When I see dueling restraining orders, that's a bad sign. It's not going to get any better, Greg Morse.
Dueling TROs are a defense lawyer's dream. It means both people are claiming to be victims. Both people are claiming to be the abuser. It shows a history of back and forth. So this is a volatile relationship from both folks in this situation. My guess is they get
there is no evidence that the victim was volatile. The victim was a cop, by the way. But that said, he's not the one that ordered a hit, according to police. He's not the one that went on Tinder, a dating site, if you want to call it that. That's a hookup site. That's what that is. But that said, he didn't go on Tinder and pretend he was looking for a date and goes, oh, by the way, can you meet me at Wawa's grocery so I can pay you to shoot my ex? That wasn't him. That's her, Morse. So don't tune up. First thing, I ask you about TROs, and you try to say it's the victim's fault. Does it never end with you?
No, it's not. They're both victims. They both had TROs, and people withdraw them all the time because they get back together. And then they have a volatile
situation. How is he the victim? Could you just explain? Wait, maybe, let me direct you to Webster's Dictionary. And I don't mean online. You need the hard copy. What do you think victim means? How is she a victim? He goes to get a TRO and she races to the courthouse. I'm first, judge. Call on me first. How is she the victim? He broke up with her, and she couldn't stand it and ordered a hit to kill him. Well, have you ever been to a murder scene? Have you ever smelled coagulated blood? Because I have, and I hope I never do again. That's what she wanted.
I've been to quite a few and have gotten plenty of not guilties in murder cases. We have, in this case...
How you managed to merge a dead body with you getting a not guilty? Excuse me, Jackie, could you toot his horn for him? No, he's doing that himself.
I'm asking you about how he's the victim.
She wanted him dead on the ground with his teen daughter.
Nancy, you have a CI on their own for 4 days creating this story, potentially. The defense has something to work with here. When have you ever heard of a CI doing their own kind of case on Tinder and then all of a sudden going to the police 4 days later. That creates opportunity.
Okay, well, you know what? I got a wonderful answer for you, okay? And her name is Dahlia DiPolito. Wait, are you actually asking me, how does a CI confidential, and, you know, I'm not impressed by you throwing around cop talk. Everybody that's watching Crime Stories knows a CI is a confidential informant. But thank you for trying. Okay, next, what are you going to throw, a Latin phrase at me? That
no,
said,
but you're looking at,
are
you're
saying
looking
it's
at,
unusual
Dahlia DiPolito is different.
For a CI to go online to trap a killer? Because it's not. Is that what you're saying?
No, but it doesn't seem like from the police report that the police were involved in this the first 4 days. So what? They have a meeting
well,
in a
thank
car?
Thank God in heaven they did get involved. No, I'm going to put your feet to the fire, Morse, because you said, what CI, which is an arm of LA law enforcement, goes online to trap a killer? Who would do that? Hey, well, listen to this. Do you know how many times I've watched that? And there's a longer version, too, which I will absolutely play. Okay, Dahlia DiPolito hires a hitman to murder her husband. And as in this case with the Molotov cocktail that Rodrigo Tetajon was telling us about and prior attempts, it wasn't her first try. According to Ellie, she tried to poison her husband in a Starbucks. I'm not even going to mention that she was a hooker, okay, because that's neither here nor there, before she got married. And he took her away from all that. Anyway, they sting her. Why did they sting her? Because they had L.E., law enforcement, as the would-be assassin. Same thing as here. And Morse, you're acting like you've never heard anything like it, like it's a big entrapment. To John Pizzorro, former New Jersey State Police investigator, 25 years. You know, there's a lot going down in New Jersey. Homicide, organized crime, cartels, commander of the Internet Crimes Against Children. It goes on and on. Currently CEO of Raven, focused on eliminating child exploitation and trafficking. John, you've certainly seen it all. But did you happen to hear Greg Morse, who is a veteran defense attorney, as he so timidly put forth, I've won a lot of cases, he says. Did you hear him say how odd it is for LE, law enforcement, an agent, a CI, to be part of a sting? I mean, who is this woman going to hire to kill her ex? A nun? A priest? A virgin? No, somebody that acts like a hitman.
Yeah, we use them all the time. I mean, informants. And by the way, I love the entrapment argument because that's the first thing defense counsel does, entrapment. But the reality is I can't tell you how many times people actually came up to us, you know, in an undercover capacity and to hire a hit person. I mean, the only difference between years ago today is that there's apps to do it where you don't have to go to the yellow pages. It's a little easier just to ask someone to do something.
Jacqueline DiOrio is a 26-year-old New Jersey woman accused of attempting to murder her cop ex-boyfriend by hiring a hitman off Tinder.
We know these two lovebirds met when the defendant, the suspect, the hairstylist, was actually doing the victim's hair. That's how they met. Let's see what more we know. Listen.
Jacqueline DiOrio, 26, lives in Runnymede, New Jersey, making her living as a barber. She hits it off with one of her clients, a police officer, twice her age. They begin dating. Their relationship lasts just over a year, but not without problems. Problems so bad that DiOrio asked for and got a restraining order put in place. She later dropped the complaint. After the breakup, DiOrio started looking at dating apps, specifically Tinder. A match is made, and Diorio makes plans to meet her new friend for the first time at a Wawa. They exchange numbers and communicate through text messages and phone calls.
Okay, to you, John Pizzorro, former New Jersey State Police, 25 years. Wow. Okay, Pizzorro. I've heard of first dates, and I always advise people when you meet online, you should meet somewhere public. But Wawa's, that should have been a tip-off right there. My sister in Philly used to live in a building on top, at the bottom of the building. It was in Grad Towers at the Wharton School. There was a Wawa. I mean, that's not really a romantic setting for your first date, is it? Was that a tip-off? I mean, Wawa's?
Well, it is Tinder, Nancy. So, I mean, you know, and there is a lot of Wawa's in New Jersey. So I guess the old Starbucks is out these days.
You know, to Dr. Sherry Schwartz now joining us, you know, she's been chomping at the bit hearing all of this. She's a forensic psychologist, and she specializes in capital mitigation and victim advocacy. And you can find her at panthermitigation.com. She's the author of Criminal Behavior, and the one I like the best, Where Law and Psychology Intersect. Dr. Sherry Schwartz, I mean, this could be a total case study for you. Because, for instance, what led up, what fueled the hatred in this hairstylist's heart that she wanted not only her boyfriend, for Pete's sake, they're not even married. They don't even have to divide property. They don't have to fight over custody. They don't have to decide who gets the pots and pans and who gets the crock pot. None of that. But it's so contentious. She wants him dead. And not just thinking, Dr. Sherry, oh, I could just kill him. Not that. Actually, going online and hiring someone to commit double murder and on a teen girl, a little girl. What is that, Dr. Sherry?
It's pure, unadulterated hatred, fueled by the fact that it seems like he broke up with her. The relationship was volatile. He didn't want to have a relationship with her anymore. And it sounds like she probably arrived at the conclusion that if I can't have you, nobody will. I don't understand why his teenage daughter had to be involved in that, unless she thought it was possible the teenage daughter could later identify that she would be the one trying to have him murdered. But this is somebody who has no regard for human life.
Guys, what happens? They start up a romantic relationship. It goes sour. They break up. She files for TRO and then almost immediately drops it. What was that about? Was that a way to play the system? But it progresses. Listen.
During Diorio's text conversation with her Tinder date, she reveals she's not really looking for love, but rather a hitman.
An informant who was working with law enforcement stated they recently met a female on a dating app, Tinder. The female identified herself to the informant as D, which was later identified as the defendant's Tinder name. The defendant and the informant then met at a Wawa in Runnymede. Subsequently, the defendant and the informant exchanged numerous text messages and phone calls. During these text messages and phone call conversations, the defendant told the informant that she wanted her ex-boyfriend killed.
I'm trying to figure out when love turns into hate and when hate turns into the desire for murder and when that desire leads you to commit an act. Now, to Greg Morse joining me, who has won a lot of cases, is name partner at Morse Legal and also current counsel to the CIA. Greg, in an attempt case, an attempted murder or an attempted anything, there are very often conspiracy charges. A conspiracy cannot be proven, as you and I have argued in court many times, unless you have an overt act. Like, I can sit around all day and think, oh, I want to kill Greg Morse so bad. How would I do it? What would I do? That's just wishful thinking. That's daydreaming. Talking about it doesn't rise to conspiracy, but you must have an overt, O-V-E-R-T, act in order to prove your case. And here, that overt act is going on Tinder, meeting someone that's still not enough, but then persuading him to do a hit. There's your overt act right there in a conspiracy charge.
Well, there is an overt act there. However, again, those first 4 days when she's interacting with this guy on Tinder and they're talking, that leaves a lot of room for argument for the defense, just like they seem to be indicating. It's not something that, this guy becomes a CI after the 4 days, not before. And that creates opportunity. You also can argue the $500 is an overt act, although paying for a hitman on layaway is odd, but that seems to be what the prosecution is alleging here.
You know, Greg Morse, when you say that leaves a lot of wiggle room, can we just get real about what you're arguing? I believe, trying to read the tea leaves of what you just said, that you're trying to argue that it was the informant's idea, that we can somehow claim entrapment. In other words, she would never have come up with a plot to murder her ex and his teen daughter but for the CI luring her into it. That's what entrapment means. I would never have done this, except the cops planned it, they lured me in, and now they're prosecuting me. I would never have done this on my own. That is what entrapment is. Are you trying to blame the CI, the confidential informant?
Well, the defense has to do something in this case,
there was a little stuttering there when you're trying to come up with the argument.
No,
what?
Listen, you have 4 days of a civilian being on their own, and then they go to the police and say, hey, this lady wants to kill her husband. Who knows what that guy's trying to work off in his past or why he presented himself to the police to be used. But as far as all accounts, Nancy, this guy was a civilian like you and I for 4 days. He packaged this and then brought it over to the law enforcement. So, I would live and die in those 4 or 8 days as a defense lawyer and see.
You know,
what
you got
I
a little problem, Greg Morse. You got a little tiny eensy beansy fly in the ointment. Here's the problem. Rodrigo Tedderhahn, isn't it true that the defendant actually wrote texts to the CI that prove what she wanted? It's not just his word against hers. She wrote texts. They're clearly from her phone. About the hit.
Yes, the prosecutors at the last hearing did read back text messages between the CI and DiOrio, where DiOrio allegedly goes over proof. She asked for proof because, in her own words, she said that she had been sent fake pictures before, which alludes to prior attempts to carry out this hit.
I just choked just a tiny bit. Wait, hold on. Can I see Greg Morse right now as Rodrigo? Okay. Could you repeat that, Rodrigo, what you just said? She said what in her text to the confidential informant?
Yeah, prosecutors read text between the CI and DiOrio, where she mentions that she needs hard proof for this hit that she wants carried out and alludes to having been sent fake pictures in a prior attempt. This is, of course, through text messages that were read out in court at the detention hearing 2 weeks ago.
Ouch. That's got to hurt, Morse. That really has to hurt. She's sending him text describing how a previous hitman failed her and burned her by sending her fake photos of the hit.
Well, people become defendants because they're not that bright. However, people text a lot of things. It doesn't mean they're going to act on it. In the news right now is NFL Hall of Famer Shannon Sharp. He had some negative text in the lawsuit against him. He said, I wasn't going to choke anybody. So people text a lot of things, you know. So you have to look at that and try to turn that around as a bluster and just talking.
A woman from New Jersey attempted to hire a hitman off Tinder to kill both her cop ex-boyfriend and his 19-year-old daughter for just $12,000.
Joining me, an all-star panel, we've been going back and forth with Greg Morse about his theory that it's all the CI confidential informant's fault that this woman, hairstylist, scorned lover, really would never have ordered a hit on her boyfriend if not for the CI luring her into it. But those text messages that she sent the CI that she met at Wawa's on a date, when he gets there, she goes, guess what? I don't want a date. I want a hitman. How about you? Those text messages are damning. And not only are they damning, they make a great identification. Listen.
The defendant then told the informant that her ex-boyfriend is a Philadelphia police officer and provided his name. The defendant also provided the informant the telephone number of the police officer's teenage daughter. The informant then met with Detective Durham of the Camden County Prosecutor's Office Major Crimes Unit, and the informant provided Detective Durham with a picture of the defendant from her Tinder profile. The informant also provided Detective Durham with the defendant's telephone number.
Wow. Rodrigo Terrajón joining us from Crime and Courts reporting at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Rodrigo, again, thank you for being with us. So she didn't even use a burner phone. She used her own phone to text with who she thought was a CI, therefore giving up her identity, unless she wants to try to claim somebody else had her phone or somehow impersonating her. She used her own phone, Rodrigo?
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Prosecutors said that the phone number and a photo of DiOrio were both shown to the officer that she had allegedly tried to have killed through this hitman. And he confirmed both that it was her in the photo and that that was the number that they had used to communicate. So this, according to what prosecutors have dug up, was her own phone number.
Well, it gets worse for her. Listen.
The informant was interviewed and told Detective Durham that the defendant was adamant about killing the victim. The informant stated they spoke about money and that the defendant stated he would be willing to pay $12,000 in cash. During the conversations, the defendant also told the informant that she wanted the victim's teenage daughter killed as well. The defendant told the informant she could pay $500 up front and the rest via installments.
Dr. Sherry Schwartz joining us, forensic psychologist. Dr. Sherry, the defendant, the hairstylist, the scorned hairstylist, reiterated over and over she was sure she wanted the hit to go down, adamant, insistent that it happens. And again, I must compare it to the Dahlia DiPolito case where she says that I believe she's 5,000% sure she wants her husband dead. And it's all caught on tape, of course. Listen.
Between now and when it's done, you know, you're not going to have an option to change your mind, even if you change your mind.
No, there's no, I'm positive, 5,000% sure.
5,000% sure. That's from our friends at ABC 2020. What does that mean, Sherry Schwartz? I mean, the CI gives the defendant opportunity to turn back, opportunity to go, you know what, this is crazy talk. I don't want to do this. But instead, they are adamant. They are hell-bent on murder.
That's exactly what it is. That she wanted the job done. She was willing to pay for it. She did, in fact, put a down payment on it. And that is an indication that you are serious and you want this done. And like it was previously mentioned, this is somebody who, by her own admission, made a prior attempt and was duped, according to her. So this is somebody who's had some time to think about it and is 100% certain that she wants this done.
Joining us is a survivor, and that doesn't begin to describe what he went through. Baron Lee is with us. He was shot point blank range, shot 9 times by teens hired by his wife to murder him. As I recall, you were going to your car and they swarmed you. You were shot 9 times and lived, all over money that was earmarked to raise their disabled son. She wanted that money. At any point when you two were having a contentious split, did you ever get the sense that she would want you dead?
Yeah, I actually had gone through a couple incidents where she tried to run me over with the vehicle. And so when I was shot, I already knew it was her who was behind it.
But when you say that you knew she was behind it, let me refine my question. When did you get a sense or an inkling that she wanted you dead? As you were lying there on the pavement, bleeding out, you knew at that moment that she was behind the hit. You weren't robbed. Correct. You weren't sex molested. You know, wasn't a carjack, nothing like that. This was obviously a hit on you specifically. And you knew then, as you were bleeding out, who did it. But leading up to that, was there a moment where you were actually afraid or thought, you know, she wants me dead?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we had a 5-year, contention of custody with my son. And during that time, she had attempted to run me over twice during child exchanges. So, you know, after the first time, I, you know, just chalked it up at first, I was just being angry. But when she tried to run me over the second time, I realized that, yeah, definitely she wanted me dead.
I guess this case is bringing back a lot of bad memories because, according to reports, this is not DiOrio's first attempt. We've got the Molotov cocktail incident that many attribute to her that has not been proven in a court of law, and she's innocent until proven guilty. Then we have her telling the CI, don't burn me. I've been burned before with fakes, with lies by a hitman. In your case, there were multiple attempts as well. Did you feel invincible? Did you believe you would never be killed?
No, of course not. But, you know, this woman sounds just like my ex-wife. It looks like she's not going to stop until she can get the job done. Even after my ex-wife had got shot and she found out that I survived, she was actually working with the teenagers to have them come back for a second attempt. So I'm sure this woman has the same kind of mindset that, you know, if left to her devices, she was going to get this job done one way or another.
During the recorded conversations, as well as previous conversations with the informant, the defendant discusses her desire to have teenage daughter of her ex-boyfriend killed, then followed by the victim, the ex-boyfriend. The reason that the defendant gave as the order of killings was that she wanted to kill the victim's teenage daughter because the killing of a police officer would draw too much scrutiny from law enforcement, while not as much law enforcement resources would be dedicated to investigating the death of an officer's daughter.
What? Did I just hear that incorrectly? To Rodrigo Terhon joining us from Philadelphia Inquirer. Rodrigo, that's why she wanted the teen daughter killed? At first, when I started investigating the case, I thought it's because she was jealous of attention or love given to the teen daughter. It wasn't that at all. This woman might as well be a lizard. Her blood is cold. Explain why she wanted the daughter killed first.
Sure. So according to what prosecutors said, and you heard it right there, she was very methodical about the order in which she wanted these two people killed. She knew, according to prosecutors, that the assassination of a police officer would bring unwanted attention. So she made it very clear, according to prosecutors, that she wanted the daughter killed first, the teen daughter killed first, and then the Philadelphia police officer to mitigate the attention that would be focused in on these hits.
Amazing the way she planned this out. Dr. Sherry Schwartz, that is some cold blood methodical planning right there. Her reasoning as to why she wanted the girl killed first?
That's what she says. I actually think there's a darker motive for why she wanted the daughter killed first. I think that she was looking to hurt her ex-boyfriend, and she wanted him to suffer before she ultimately had him murdered.
Wow. To increase the suffering of the boyfriend. How is it, again, Dr. Sherry, I can understand all the hatred that must brew, must percolate and boil over in, say, a long-term marriage. But here, there was no property division. There was no custody argument, no pots and pans, no dog to argue, nothing. How could you develop such intense hatred in just a brief dating relationship?
I mean, this is somebody who maybe came to the relationship with that level of hatred. It's hard to say. There isn't anything specific that I saw in researching the case that cites a reason that he did something to her that maybe would cause her to have such bitter antipathy toward him. But sometimes people come as they are, and that may be a reason that the relationship didn't work out.
The most concerning aspect of the facts of this case involving the fact that this appears not to be an isolated attempt by the defendant to contract with someone to kill the victim. As evidenced in S4, which is a text message screenshot between the defendant and the informant, the defendant states as she had people look her in the eye and lie before, and how is she going to get proof? She also says that fake pictures could be sent to her, and how is she going to believe that the defendant, that the victim was in fact dead, and how she said someone previously sent her fake pictures before.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Jennifer Emmy, a well-known lawyer defending animal rights, now has to defend herself against allegations she ordered a hit on her ex-husband's new girlfriend. After the couple's nasty divorce, a hand at Emmy's nonprofit ranch went to the police with a recording of Emmy asking if he knew anyone who could take care of her ex's much younger new girlfriend, during which she said, "No one will miss her if someone could help me get rid of her."
It's amazing to me. Amazing in the sense that when you go to the snake house at the zoo, you look at the snakes through a thick glass wall, or looking at a tarantula in a box. Amazing in that sense that not only, according to the state, of course, DiIorio is innocent until proven guilty. According to the state, she wanted not only her boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, but his teen daughter dead too. In the case of attorney Jennifer Emmy, she wanted the girlfriend of her ex murdered. That's a whole different psychopathy. And in this case, Greg Morse, you've got both. According to prosecution, now, a great defense attorney like you may be able to convince the jury, oh, this was all just talk. She didn't mean it. She didn't really want it to happen. But we do have her, according to the prosecutors, handing over a down payment of $500 at Dollar General. She picks the places, right, where you know there's going to be surveillance video. The handover is at Dollar General and Wawa's. They're like Vegas, for Pete's sake. They're covered in oh my goodness. Yeah, there. They're covered in security video. I guess you didn't think that part through. But the desire to have not only your object of hatred murdered, but then an innocent person who's getting dragged into it. I'm sure you could probably argue to a jury it's all just talk. She didn't really want it to happen. She didn't know what she was saying. Don't prosecute her. Don't send her to jail. I can hear it right now. But that's a whole nother layer of evil. You don't just want your hate object dead. You want people around them dead.
Well, I think you're right. And what was said before, it was probably to harm the ex-boyfriend to see his daughter killed first, and then, you know, he has to suffer that. But you also, you know, you have a situation here where folks, what they think in their head, it's going to be like when they pull a trigger, or in this case, try to hire someone to kill someone. The reality, though, of that and how that plays out is totally different, as we see in all these cases, whether it's DiPolito, whether it's DiIorio, they're on surveillance cameras. They have phones registered in their name. These are folks that aren't making the smartest choices, right? So, but I also think that
that doesn't make the victim any less dead, Morse.
Well, there's nobody dead here, and maybe it was because she was on the Elarzepam that was found in her car. She's charged with that also, drug count. So, and she also offered $500
please put him
for
up.
A hit on a
please
person in 2025.
You're actually trying to argue that the illegal use of drugs is somehow a defense as opposed to an additional felony charge. We all know, all the legal eagles know that voluntary use of drugs or alcohol is never a defense.
No, but it doesn't mean it can't lead to some break with reality or there's some impact on her. She was acting weird. Anyone that's had a loved one who's been under a lot of anesthesia knows when you come out of it sometimes, you're going to have some mental issues. You're going to see the world differently. You're going to see the world wrong. Maybe she had an impact on that because she only paid $500.
Are you somehow comparing this to when I videoed the twins after they had their wisdom teeth cut out?
No.
Because, it never ends with you. You're actually giving me a headache right now.
Medication.
Okay.
Medication. What medication does
Good luck
affect
with that.
Their mindset?
Rodrigo Tedahon joining us from Philadelphia Inquirer. Where does the case stand now? What's happening?
Sure. So there is a next hearing scheduled for middle of June. Right now, DiOrio is in custody without bail. So she's basically in jail until her next court hearing. I've attempted to reach the officer that is allegedly the target of this hit attempt. Have been unable to reach him or his family. And that's really where it stands. You know, the detention hearing was basically to figure out if she would be released because she has no prior criminal record. Of course, the judge sided with the prosecutor's office and said, we're going to go give no bail and she's going to be in custody until her next hearing.
If you know or think you know anything about the alleged attempt on the officer's life or his daughter's life, the case is still being built by the state. 856-225-5127. Repeat, 856-225-5127. Now, we remember an American hero, police officer Christopher Kilcullen, Eugene PD, Oregon, shot and killed in the line of duty. 12 years with law enforcement, leaving behind widow Christy, daughters Sydney and Katie Ann. American hero, Officer J. Christopher Kilcullen. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.